yesteryear.
Howdy, folks.
Yes, it is your old friend Singing Sam. So let's just settle back and reminisce a bit. What do you say, huh?
With a nostalgic nod toward the Atwater Kent, we now present Same Time, Same Station, a chronicle of broadcasting's first half century.
Return with us now to those thrilling days of yesteryear.
Tonight, Bing Crosby remembers radio.
When my lonely journey is done, and kindly old Reverend Thomas made us a promise, it will make the two of us one. So I'm hitting the trail to the cow country. You can forward my mail, tell of RFD. I'm gonna settle down and never more roam, and make the San Fernando Valley my home. And make the San Fernando Valley my home. And make the San Fernando Valley my home.
We ask the man who has influenced six decades of America's music to pick his favorites, the stars, musicians, and actors who would make up this final chapter. From the archives of the Pacific Pioneer Broadcasters and the collection of Ed Rice come the transcribed excerpts which will illustrate his answer. Here to narrate is Bing Crosby.
Well, they'd have to be people that are available. A lot of them are gone. Oh, everybody's available. Oh, I'd love to have Louis Armstrong and Jack Teagarden.
Suddenly,
Tend my heart,
make it from this cabin.
Man, I don't want to go nowhere.
Oh, no, Father. But you ain't going nowhere. You sitting, you're grabbing. You grabbing. The flies around the old rocket jet, lighting you. My dear old Aunt Harriet.
Yes, son. How long has she
been? Way up in heaven she be. For the end of the time, the trouble I've seen.
Yeah, nobody knows the trouble I've seen.
Oh, Rocket Jet, get it. Rocket Jet, get it. And Judgment Day.
Take it, Fetch.
Every day was fun when you worked with Louis. Lots of laughs. A great artist. He could do anything. He'd pick up the whole session wherever he was. Make it enjoyable. He's so inventive.
Way down yonder in New Orleans, in the land of dreamy scenes, there's a Garden of Eden. Oh, that's what I mean. Creole babies with flashing eyes softly whisper with tender sighs. Stop. Oh, won't you give your lady fair a little smile? Stop. Bet your life you linger there a little while. There's heaven right here on earth with those beautiful queens down yonder in New Orleans. Yonder in New Orleans, man, you should have made all those things.
Why didn't you send me a ticket?
Down on Bourbon and Ramparts, back there in the team,
the roaring umpteen.
Way back yonder, these poor old chops had an amateur that was stopped.
You're singing it.
Pop. You should have heard old Satchmo play.
I bet it was grand.
Yes, chicks would leave their bowls to come and stand around the band. It was heaven right here on earth with those beautiful queens. I went down yonder and knew I was queen. Orange blossoms, sweet aroma, and the strains of La Paloma seem to put you into a coma when those sad men would play. We would dig the cotton and vent.
Who?
King Oliver and Parente. Bring the tiger, that's the plenty. Until the break of day.
Black-eyed peas
wafting out on the evening breeze.
Not waste any
man.
Of
this. You should have seen these minstrel men do their parade.
Man, you talk about your lemonade made in the shade.
It was heaven right here on earth before rocket machines. Away down yonder in New Orleans.
Dinah, is there anyone finer in South Carolina? If there is, then you know it, you know it, I'm sure you mean to be Dinah. where the big guys blazing, all with us is gazing to the Ashley. My dynamite every night, why did I shake a bright? Because my dynamite changed your mind about me. Dinah, if you want to do China, I'll put up a little China. Every night, why do I shake with pride? 'Cause my dynamite changed your mind about me.
The name of this song is Dinah.
That is.
The name of this song is Dinah.
Maggie.
The name of this song is
Dinah.
I'll tell
it. The name of this song is Dinah. Dinah. Wanted to China. Native Carolina.
Then you know where I would like to have you. Show it to me, Dinah. Got those dixie eyes blazing. I want to sit and gaze in through the eyes of Dinah Lee. Oh, Dinah, did you want to do China? Would you give me an ocean liner just to be with Dinah?
And here he is, ladies and gentlemen, the man who boiled the hot water when Al Jolson was born, Mr. Bing Crosby, right there.
Well, I knew Bob way back in 28, 29, 30. I played the Capitol Theater in New York with Bob on the stage. He was doing an act with a girl then. And we both belonged to the Friars Club, which was an actor's club in New York City for vaudevillians. Mostly the Lambs is the club for the legitimate actors, but the Friars was for vaudeville performers. And we became very good pals. In fact, his wife, Dolores, I knew her before he did. She was in the cast of Honeymoon Lane, the Broadway show. And we were on some dates together. And then he was brought out to Hollywood to make some pictures. He'd become very popular on the radio, emanating out of New York. And, of course, we got to playing golf and got friendly, and they put us in a picture together. And it was one of those feuds that publicity writers develop. It's like the Winchell-Fred Allen feud, or the Ben Bernie-Winchell feud. They're created more than stimulated by the people themselves. And if they produce laughs, then they expand it and develop it. And that's what happened with Hope and I. I, even today, I go through a crowd or somebody, and somebody in Hollywood, where's Hope, you know, or... Or you got Hope put away, or what she said lately about you, or Hope says he can beat you at golf. That's the stock one. I get that all the time at golf matches or exhibitions or tournaments. And somebody says, Hope tells me he can give you two a side anytime. The public kind of keeps that thing alive. That's a good thing.
Can he keep you two a side?
No, the other way around. I give him two a side and gently bring him in crisp.
And now we know. Love that little love bird. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. And good night, everybody.
Good night. Wait a minute, boy. Where are you going?
I sang my number. I gave the show a little class. Now I'm off.
Gave the show a little class. Look, you hopped up Hildegard. You'd better stop going to that African barber. He's been shrinking your head again.
Flattery will get you nowhere, Saggy. Now, come. Where's this new show of yours everybody's been talking about?
Well, haven't you heard? I'm on for Swan this year. They make soap, you know.
Yeah? Too bad it's not something you use.
Hey, Lump Lap, you've got two chins. Would you like to try for one?
Now, let's face it, Nostril King. Before I sang my song, This show was laying a large swan egg. True or false?
Get him. Look, Philco Knob, last week...
A large set.
You're wearing the cabinet there, too. Look, last week my hand slipped and I happened to tune in your show. Now I know why it's transcribed and you broadcast it later.
What do you mean?
Gives you time to get out of town and hide before the people hear it.
To think, when I first met this boy, he had a job blowing out glove compartments at a car wash.
Steady, couch pouch.
Now look, ratchet head, if I'm doing...
Oh! Late writing. Wait. Oh, there's some sneaky things going on.
If I'm going to endure this vilification, I want my money first.
Shall I explain vilification before we go on? They'll understand it around Gonzaga anyway. How about that? He's been on the show for 3 minutes and he's worried about the loot. Bing, what are you knocking yourself out for? After all, you know you can't take it with you.
I know, so I'm sending my brother Everett on ahead to open up a charge account for me.
I'm ready.
Bing, there's something that's always bothered me. When you send in your income tax, how do you get that mattress in the mailbox?
Easy, bog brain. I never have any trouble with my taxes. Why, I'd give President Truman the shirt off my back.
I know. I saw pictures of him wearing it in Key West.
What's that you're wearing there? Tamale husk with a belt in the back?
Nice of you to slip your coat on for this, anyway.
Think I'm too frisky?
Say, Don't care for that, huh? I guess not. We'll ignore the next six lines. All right. New kind of radio. Just throw the whole thing away. Hey, look. You better stop being so frisky or I'll tell Abby Rents to stop souping up your wheelchair.
Wheelchair? Come. That's no way to talk to a man who's just reached 35.
You're 35? Mm-hmm. 35 times what?
Wait a minute, you're snapping your wig, my boy. If you remember at my last birthday party, I had a cake with only 35 candles on it.
Yeah, but at the bottom it said continued on the next cake. What does age matter? I saw your last picture and I thought you were great.
That's a coincidence, so did I.
Read that line again. There's a talent scout here tonight from the Wilson Ham Company.
He's got his stamp, he'll make you grade A, I'm sure.
Like a stag one, a pink one. You know, we ought to make a picture together again, Bing. I stopped over at your house last night to talk to you about it, but nobody was home.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah, I must have rung your bell about 5 times.
6 times.
Oh, so it was you up in the window with the hot oil, huh? Look, Vigor, old boy, you're just jealous because I made the pale face without you.
Me jealous of Bob Hope?
Mm-hmm.
I have so much more than Ho's nose. Why should I fight it?
Tell me, Bob, I
want to laugh without even reading it. I love that. How'd you feel having Jane Russell opposite you instead of me in that picture?
How would anyone feel switching to filet mignon after a diet of hog's livers?
Hold it, swivel snout, hold it.
But really, Bing, we always have so much fun making pictures together. People seem to like them. They do well at the box office. How come we haven't worked together lately?
Oh, I don't know. Just lucky, I guess. I don't know how to break this to you, kid, but on the screen, you sort of cramp my style.
What do you mean?
Well, for my money, you don't look too good.
With your money, nobody has to look too good. Excuse me, Bing. I didn't mean to raise my voice.
That's all right.
You're sure I didn't blow your hearing aids?
I'm tuned in to We the People. I'm on a two-party line. Besides, kid, I like to do a lot of singing in my pictures. And with you around, it's just
singing?
So...
Mm-hmm. I didn't want to say anything, but when you sang your song before, you sounded like Jessica with her net dragging. Why don't you give up?
Give up? Singing is my life, Robert.
It is, huh?
Of course, I've been lucky. There's the radio and the records and the jukeboxes, but I dare say I'd have been a singer 200 years ago.
Weren't you?
I ignore that and repeat, Bob, that 200 years ago I still could have made a living with my pipe.
Are you kidding? I suppose composers like Mozart and Beethoven would have been writing songs for you.
Not wholly impossible. I can see myself asking Ludwig von Beethoven to knock out a little ditty for me.
Almost sounds as if we're going into a sketch.
Could be.
Already.
Ach, the Lieber.
I've got to stop those jam sessions mit Dizzy von Gillespie.
Oh, Ludwig, Ludwig.
Yeah, Mama.
I've got the message for you. Mo called.
Mo who?
Mozart.
Mama, have you been spiking the strudel again?
Oh, Ludwig, there's somebody here to see you. Herr Bingel von Krosbein.
Oh, well, send him in.
Good day, I'm Herr von Krosbein.
Who?
Herr von Krosbein.
The Krosbein, I believe, but where the hell?
Say, tell me, is that your nose or are you eating a sausage there?
What can I do for you?
Well, I'm a singer.
A broken down schnook like you is a singer? Ach, du Liverwurst, this is giving me mine Charlie's.
I have, you know, I'm Bingo von Kaufbein, the famous singer. For 3 years, I played at Club Die Fritzies. And I've come all the way from Unter den Linden to see you. Jawohl, auch der Liebe und unter Blitzen, ihr Schweinhund.
Lean back, Dummkopf. You're getting Limburger on the microphone.
Believe me, that's an improvement. Look, Beethoven, I got a deal for you. You're a composer, I'm a singer.
All right, let's try a song together.
Good.
You know, Krosbein, I dedicated this composition to that wonderful restaurant that used to be on Oberhauser Street.
Oh, yeah, you mean that delicatessen place where they had those king-sized pigs' feet?
Yeah. Tiny Voigt behind the bar, and he had a big red nose.
Mo would make the Wiener Schnitzel and the sauerkraut with the meanies in the middle.
What a wonderful place for Heinies and Mo. They never would light out the lights, cause the place would never close.
And Schuch would play a squeeze box all of it off to leave us such a beautiful smoke.
You could blow your top in Heinies and Mo.
Ach, we must have gay blades in those days, eh, mein Herr?
Yeah, I remember we belonged to the Wilhelmstrassen Pickled Herring and Necking Society.
Yeah. Sometimes we got around to the Pickled Herring.
Yeah. You fractured me, Krosbein.
Oh, you stinker, you.
Don't care.
Has your nose always been like that, or did you have that ballpoint put on it then?
What is that?
Lunch was gorgeous, the beer was always cold, and the dancing with the women, ah, the women,
yeah, you're old.
You could smell the place for 16 blocks, and it wasn't any rose. Garlic cheese and olive burger, pickles mixed with the herring together, and the meatballs tasted just like leather.
Chopped up liver and bologna, pickled 6 feet that were bony and salami.
Say, Professor!
What is it?
Now you heard me sing, how do you like my voice?
Please, not while I'm eating.
Let's go where the place is jumping. Let's all go down to Heinies and Moe.
This is Crosby's Choice, an hour of excerpts from radio programs and records of the 30s and the 40s.
In love with all those boys who mow we fine ladies. But now I tell each young gazelle to go the hell, I mean Hades. Such a sweet million miles while tearing off a game of golf. I may make a play for the caddy, but when I do, I don't follow through, cause my heart belongs to daddy. If I invite a boy some night to dine on my fine spinning hattie, I just adore his asking for more, but my heart belongs to daddy. Yes, my heart belongs to daddy, so I simply couldn't be fair. Yes, my heart belongs to daddy, and
da 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 da. So I want to want you, laddie. No, I think you're perfectly swell. But my heart belongs to daddy, and my daddy he treats it so well. So as the days at football games may long for a strong undergraddy, I never dream of making the team, 'cause my heart belongs to daddy. So I want to want you, laddie. No, I think you're perfectly swell. That my heart belongs to daddy, and my daddy, he treats it so well.
Very stylish piece of Fort Cellis lifting, James. Robin, tell me, how were the Loch Levens and the Dolly Vardens? How were they biting up in the High Sierra?
Bing, I've got a confession to make to you.
What's this?
I didn't go near the High Sierras on my vacation.
Are you kidding?
No, I spent every bit of my time up in the state of Washington.
Well, I think you did better at that, probably.
Yes, sir. That's where you came from.
That's
know?
My stamping ground.
I know that. That's the reason I went. And that's
see any of my friends up
that's
there?
The reason I got a confession. For the past 2 years, you've been standing around here laughing at my kinfolk.
Yeah.
And I just went up there to...
I
went up there to see some of your kinfolk, and I saw them. And, boy, I want to tell you, you've got some dillies.
You'll find me, Bob, if I...
No, you stay here, Bing. Don't you run away now, because...
Stay here and take it, huh?
Yes, yeah, stay here and take it. I want to tell you something about your folks. You haven't seen them lately. The first one I called on when I got up there was your Uncle Mo Crosby. I got out to his house at dinner time, and all the grown folks is in the dining room eating. So I went in the parlor where the children were waiting in there for the second table. And the way the old folks got through, and I noticed that the parlor was just plumb full of pigs. And I asked your cousin Lillis. I asked him, I said, what are all them pigs doing in the parlor? And he says, well, we try to raise these pigs upright and mannerly. And says, Mama always runs them out of the dining room so they can't see Papa eating. But we could hear the grown folks in the dining room kind of chomping on the food. But I noticed every once in a while there was a whistle. There'd be a... And then a kind of a scrambling sound. And after a while, and another scrambling sound. And I asked your cousin Lily what the whistling was about. And he says, well, he says, Papa used to eat up all the biscuits. Said he'd cram them in his mouth without chewing on them, and nobody else would get any. So we had to make a rule here that you have to chew the biscuit up and swallow it and have your mouth empty enough so you can whistle before you reach the... I want to tell you that the way I figure it, your kin folks are just about four times as funny as mine. Now, you always laugh when I mention my Aunt Boo. How about your own Aunt Boo 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 Boo? That's the one, you know her. I want to tell you, that's the one that you told me was an artist. You said that every time she saw a beautiful piece of landscape or beautiful work of nature, her face would light up. But Bing Crosby, you did tell me that the reason her face lit up so easy is because she's lantern-jawed. I want to tell you, you ain't been fair about this thing at all. I'll say one thing, in all fairness to your family, they do all wear shoes. That's a fact. Nice, high, yellow button ones. And I said to your cousin Dillard, I said, where did you get the idea of the button shoes? And he says, well, we, you know, us boys, we all try to dress like Cousin Bing. Says they tell us he's the best dressed man in Hollywood. And one of them says he is sure, boy, he's just as hot as a bandit pistol. That's what your folks think of you. They say you're sharp as a tack up there. But I ask him where he got the idea for his button shoes, and he says, well, says Cousin Bing never would write us and tell us whether he wore lace shoes or button ones. But one night we heard him sing, one, two, button my shoe, and we caught on. But tonight I am going to dedicate my number to that beautiful Puget Sound country. It's the prettiest country I ever saw in my life. I'm going to play the land of the sky blue water, if I can remember. Go ahead, Jimmy.
That was beautiful. That was really...
I think Cal Cool and Cal Carroll put him on the show. I think he made some appearances in the East with Valley on the radio or something. And they saw a great potential there, and they nailed him and signed him up. And he was a remarkable performer. He was a great storyteller. And he had the bazooka, which was a really terrible prop, but it was good for lots of laughs.
In my book about the Kraft Music Hall, None of Your Business, I noted that the bazooka was the only instrument in the world that had a weapon of offense named after it, probably because it sounded so offensive. I was later told by military men that this was a mistake. The bazooka is a weapon of defense. Leave it to the Army to louse things up.
Strange thing, you know. After Bob did his monologue every week, he'd always play a solo on the bazooka. And Perry Bodkin was in the band, the guitar player. Spike Jones was in the band. And a couple of other fellows who had creative impulses in a humorous direction. And they'd accompany him on these bazooka solos, and they would try to fix up an accompaniment that would break him up in some way, you know. They would get laughs. And Spike Jones, of course, was the leading figure in that movement. And that's how Spike Jones developed all the weird sounds and all the gimmicks and the gadgets that he later employed when he went out with his own band right there at the Kraft Music Hall accompanying Bob Burns. Because every week he'd come with some new instrument of torture, you know, a ratchet or a funny horn or a whole group of bells, a clutch of bells of some kind. And between him and Perry Bodkin and Jerry Colonna was in the band, too, they'd really come up with some beautiful accompaniments.
I had the most ignominious of all of the tasks to do in that show musically, and that was to arrange the background to Bob Burns' bazooka solos. This was a regular thing. I would have to go out on Friday night to his home for a while in Stone Canyon, later in Reseda, California, and we'd have to discuss what he was going to play the next week and all that. Well, he expected this attention, and I didn't at all mind, though, because he was a delightful guy. But every week, he had a strange feeling about this bazooka of his. He envisioned this as a beautiful instrument, and like, you know, like a trombone or something like that. And each time we would begin a discussion, he'd say, Perry, let's play a pretty one this week. And I had already had my instructions from Carol Carroll, who was the head writer on the show, to louse it up, to make a, you know, make a real hokey bit out of this thing, which would precede his dropping it. He'd break the horn in half and drop it on the floor. You remember the sound effect would be the finish of the bazooka solos.
He never knew what was coming, and he enjoyed it. It helped his bazooka solo along, because if you had to listen to that thing straight, It'd be pretty gangrenous.
So I'd say, well, all right. Or how about this tune? Or I'd have a list of tunes that I thought might be good. He never learned anything new. It was just the old things. But his reverence for the bazooka and the way he played it, he'd worry whether he played it in tune or not, you know, things of this. There was a funnel on the front end of a piece that had been welded to the front of a, we'll call it a two-inch pipe. And inside of that pipe was a smaller pipe that slipped back and forth, and it served as a surface to slide back and forth. And it's true, since it was closed at one end, when he'd blow and he'd bring it up, he'd raise it in pitch. It's almost like those washed tub basses that you see once in a while, in that you could change the tone, but you never quite knew where. And so this was his, and he'd used it in his vaudeville act. He was quite successful, you know, as a monologist in vaudeville, as a hick comedian, much, you know, ahead of this. And he came to New York and was one of the more fortunate and caught on big.
One of the more choice contenders in the season's cinema sweepstakes is MGM's tuneful tinted tin type titled Summer Stock. Tonight we boast the presence of the star of that merry piece, Miss Judy Garland.
I'd like to have Judy Garland, who could do anything. Judy Garland, in addition to being a great singer and a great dancer, was a marvelous low comedian. She could do Dutch or Italian or colored, any kind of comedy you wanted, baggy pants comedy, hokey comedy. And she was a great actress, dramatic actress. I think probably the most talented woman I ever was in contact with, Judy Garland. Later on, she became more of a chanteuse dramatique, like Edith Piaf, you know. She was an image she'd created or had been created by her personal life. But actually, she was a marvelous comedian, low comedian, or high comedy, too, if you wanted
that. Yeah, it's a long introduction. What a build-up.
Well, I'm not going to give Hope any, so I thought I'd give you a double help.
This here chit-chat, Crosby. I'm Captain Judy Garland of the FBI.
Oh, you're going to pinch me for shooting that vice president, huh?
Yeah, I'm taking you to the caliber.
Now, just a minute. You can't arrest me. I'll plead to unwritten law.
And what's that?
I don't know. It ain't been written yet.
Oh, come on, Charlotte.
But, Captain Judy, it seems a shame to make you come here for nothing. As long as you're here, why don't we sing something?
Well, let's sing Sam's song.
Okay, what part do you want?
I'll take Gary's part, but I'll lay back. I won't push you like he did.
Push me, huh? Gotta play that record when I get home. You'll see what he did. John Scott, we're ready, boss.
Here's a happy tune. You love to croon. They call it Sam's song.
Catchy as can be, the melody. They call it Sam's song.
Nothing on your mind. Soon you find you're humming Sam's song.
Why, it makes you grin. Gets under your skin. As only a song can do. People that you meet out on the street are whistling Sam's song.
Everyone you see will soon agree, ah, such a grand song.
Don't forget your troubles, wear a smile. You'll find you'll never go wrong
if you learn to croon this happy tune. They call it Sam's song.
We developed this classic American theme just a little further.
The happy tune
that'll bring you a smile all the while when you tune it, you're reeling inside.
And the title is Sam's song.
Catch
happy as can be.
With a sign of beat and the melody sweet, you tap on your feet.
And the title is Samson.
Nothing on your mind.
But the news of the day and the bills and the state. Keep your hair turning gray, but you're still humming Samson.
It makes you why it makes you grin. It's under your skin, as only a song can do.
People that you meet.
Hello, Joe, what you know? And remind me to motel and business is slow, but I'm whistling Samson.
Everyone you see
has a story to tell or a gimmick to sell, but agree that it's swell and it's really a
Samson. Don't forget your troubles, wear a smile. You'll find you'll never go wrong.
If you learn to coo like a lark in the park, who is making his mind serenade in the dark with the chorus of Samson.
If you learn to coo a happy tune, they call it Samson.
Don't stop them, please. Well, Judy Garland, say, you're a sight for sore eyes.
Thank you.
Well, I'm here, too. I know, you gave me the sore eyes. You're the one that's on television. You've given everybody erratic orbs. Now, don't be bitter, old-timer. You'll get into that new medium yet.
I suppose so.
We're working on the widescreen. You'll make it.
I imagine they'll get to me. Eventually, they'll start scraping the top of the barrel.
Yeah. It's about time you had your barrel scraped.
Now, just...
Say, Bob, incidentally, now that you're with Chesterfield and you're a guest here, suggestion, please. Yeah. Why don't you try and conject yourself with a little savoir faire, a little, you know, say, quoi, joie de vivre, esprit de corps, dernier cri. Look, V.N. Rose. Don't try to dazzle me with that stale French of yours.
I could dazzle you with English, Bob.
Dazzle be enough out of you. Hey, listen, you vice president killer, why'd you take a shot at me?
That shot came from the audience.
That couldn't happen on my show. We frisk everybody before they come in.
If I come to your show next week, I'm going to wear a diving bell.
Don't worry about Flabby, Judy. He's harmless. He has to wear a used seed bag so he can feel his oats. Say, listen, I want to say one thing. You're feeling pretty gay tonight, aren't you,
Dad? I'm bubbly, yes, I'm bubbly.
Has Gary got a sore throat or something? You going to have his tonsils out?
Well, if he does, I got a priority. And let me tell you something, Robert. Last August, when you were out of work, just want to remind you of something. Just think back a little.
What?
Last August, when you were out of work, you were singing an entirely different tune.
Yeah, what about that offer I had to sell Schmuggelheim hog food?
I wish you'd stop inferring that you set me in with Chesterfield.
Well, I did set you in. I not only got you a wonderful job, but I fixed it so you could smoke the best cigarette in the world.
Listen, I always smoke Chesterfield.
Yeah, but now you're smoking whole ones. Nice.
Anyway, Judy, last summer I had heard Bob was despondent, dejected, unhappy, desolate, and unemployed. One day I walked over to his house. I found him in the barbecue pit, rooting around and foraging for morsels of meat left over from his more affluent days. As I drew closer, I heard him singing as he dusted the ashes off a charred meatball. Schmuggelheim's hog food, oink, 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 oink. Schmuggelheim's hog food, oink, 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 oink.
Hey, what's going on?
I'm working in a hog food singing commercial. I think I can land the Schmuggelheim account.
Bobsy. Big news for you. I'm going to take you to see the Chesterfield people.
See Mr. Crampton. He's the head man, you know.
Oh, Bing, you're a doll. How can I ever repay you? Gosh, I feel terrible when I think of all the awful things I've said about you and all the wonderful things you do for me.
Oh, Bob.
No, really, Bing, I've been a cad to you. I've treated you miserably, and all the time you've been my benefactor, I should grovel in the dust at your feet.
Well, Bob, you're appreciative. You're humble. You're grateful. You're faking.
Now, you won't get an Oscar till they award him for vagrancy. Now, come on, will you? And be on your best behavior. Really watch it, will you, kid? Because the Chesterfield people, they never heard of you. Never heard of you, so got everything in your favor. Now, here's the Chesterfield office right here. Before we go in, let's see how you look.
Well, I'll slip on my jacket. Pretty spiffy, huh?
Uh-huh.
I had it made special to impress the sponsor. It's a Chesterfield.
Beautiful color.
Sort of a golden brown.
Don't hold yourself back. You know. That's all right. I think we got enough out of that. Go ahead.
Love the color, too. I really love it. It's sort of a golden brown, isn't it?
Yes, it's made out of real tobacco.
Oh, you got the pouch for it. Now, before we do...
Butterhip, watch it, watch it.
Come on now, Joker. Let's go on in. Now, come on.
Oh, good morning, Mr. Crosby.
Morning.
Well, I see you've been out in the fields picking tobacco this morning.
No, that's a coat. There's a man under it.
Go right in, Mr. Crosby. Mr. Crampton's expecting you.
Good morning, Mr. Crampton.
Well, good morning, Bing. Oh, I see you've been out in the field this morning picking tobacco.
No, Mr. Crampton, that's a coat.
Bob. Part the leaves. Will you stick your head out? Say hello to Mr. Crampton. How do you do, Mr. Crampton? I can speak. How are you, Crappy? Tobacco's a smell milder, smoke milder.
Well, bless my soul. This man has had his basic training.
Oh, he's quick, very quick. Not talented.
Well, Bing, don't just stand there. Have a seat. And, Mr. Ho?
Yes, sir.
You curl up right there in the ashtray.
Say, Mr. Sampson, I spoke to you about Mr. Hope on the phone, you remember?
He's a pal of mine. I was wondering if we could find a place for him in the Chesterfield family.
My buddy.
This fellow's desperate, Mr. Crampton. He's very anxious to work, and of course, money isn't important. No, I'll take the factory.
Say, that's rather amusing. Not very amusing, just rather. I suppose we could use another program, but, Bing, do you really believe this man has the figure and the personality to get through his advanced training?
Advanced training? What's that? Oh, Bob, you see, all of us fellows who work for Chesterfield, we have to go out and meet the public. Each of us is assigned to a certain territory. Well, I like to get out and meet the people. I can hustle plenty of Chesterfields. Where do I operate?
My secretary will give you your cigarette tray and your black nylons. Have your hair done and report for work at Zero's tonight.
You mean I have to be a cigarette girl at Zero's?
What are you beefing about? I'm working the Macambo.
Holy smoke, are you Carlotta?
Yes, I am. I am indeed.
No!
My black curls fooled you, didn't they?
And to think I parked across the street until 4 a.m. last Thursday waiting for Crosby to count up.
No cracks, sir. I'll tell how you acted on the way home.
You must have had those curls glued on real tight. We had quite a tussle.
I did enjoy slapping your face.
Yes, you
did. And incidentally, I'll thank you to return my garter.
I may as well. All the snap's gone out of it anyhow. Imagine me thinking you were Carlotta. I don't see how you fooled me. You look more like a used Carlotta. Madman Muntz is writing on this show.
Final chapter in a six-week review of Bing Crosby on records and radio. Our special thanks to Bing Crosby for his time and help in preparing this series. And to Ken Carpenter, Carol Carroll, John Scott Trotter, and Perry Bodkin for their materials and memories. Finally, thanks to Ed Rice, owner of one of the largest collections of Crosbyana in this country.
The 17 years that I spent with Bing Crosby were probably the happiest and most successful of my life. I was able to further myself as a result of the prestige gained from this man, who certainly has become a legend in his own time.
But you know, it's very interesting, John, to live long enough to become nostalgia. 2 or 3 years ago, the youngsters sort of put down somebody of my age. But now they don't. I mean, they want to hear about the time, you know?
To this day, even though we left Crosby in 1955, there isn't a morning that Uncle John doesn't call me, and we cross the time of day, and we're associated in music publishing and various other enterprises together. And it's been a long and delightful thing.
Yeah, it was great fun. Marvelous days with the Kraft Music Hall and the Philco, Woodbury and the other shows. And it reached an awful lot of people and certainly gave great momentum to my career. But the records were the most fun, I think, the recording sessions. Pictures were fun, too, in the old days. Now, it's not that way now. Now it's they're budget-conscious and trend-conscious. And in the old days in the studio, I can remember at Paramount, dressing rooms, there was a line of them there. Claudette Colbert, Gary Cooper, Fred McMurray, Fred McMarch, Dietrich, Volpe.
When you return, you'll find waiting here.
Next week for another nostalgic look at radio of yesteryear.
And now it's just about time we were picking up our memories and moving along our way. I hope you've enjoyed listening to these songs and the memories that go with them as much as I've enjoyed bringing them to you. And I'll be keeping my weather eye peeled, yes, sir, looking for you all to join us the next time we drop around this way for a friendly little get-together. And I hope that'll be real soon, folks. And until then, this is your old friend, Singin' Sam, saying goodbye for now.
Same Time, Same Station is produced for KRLA News and Public Affairs by John Price. Special research by Martin Halpern. And your announcers were John Rygren and Bill Browning.
Be sure to be with us next week at this same time, same station.